all disturbance and chaos folds up in the teeth of truth. The Duke of Alba is dashing about, losing battles left and right, and talking about how horrible the enemy is, and his troops and his government are getting very, very upset. And his king is getting more and more discouraged and so forth. And then one day the fatal shaft of truth cuts through this whole chaos. He's been in the enemy pay all the time. Immediately everything sets back to rights again, and the troop morale comes back, and they go and they defeat the enemy, and the king works out at the end. Well, that's a dramatic incident with regard to truth. But all truth, whether dramatic or simple, has the same effect. Don't ever try to stop truth. It's the only thing that can go through 16-inch armor plate. This fellow is screaming and howling and raving around, and he's cutting you up one side and down the other. And if you know the mind, you say, the reason you're mad at me is because you had a withhold from me concerning my paycheck 2 months ago. Watch him fold up if that's the truth. Don't watch him fold up if it isn't, because he won't if it's not the truth. A fellow named Jones lives over here on the edge of St. Hill. He has been snapping and snarling and screaming and howling about what horrible things we were liable to do to him at any minute. I wrote him a letter not too long ago, and I said, if you'll just carefully review the things which you have done to us that you think we don't know about, you'll feel much happier about it. I haven't had a word since. It's just been a tomb-like silence. Interesting. It's interesting, the clean blade of truth. And it can't be stopped. Now, in a universe which is kept going and made very disturbed continuously by lies, all the basic and fundamental facts of the universe had been completely covered up, and particularly those related to life and death. These things were completely masked, and nothing but disturbance and chaos had been dug up around them for so long that that data was gone. It wasn't just hard to find, it was just gone. In fact, many contrary data existed. It was pretty hard to sift this stuff out, get a toehold onto this sort of thing. What is the truth about man? What is he? What kind of a being is he? Who is he? What's he doing? What's he here for? What am I here for? What am I doing? What am I trying to do? What am I trying to get done? How long will I live? What'll happen to me when I die? What kind of a being am I, anyhow? These are the basic and fundamental questions. Those questions and answers thereto, on a time-honored basis, belonged in the realm of philosophy. The answers to those things always have. Well, philosophy had come to such a decadence that I think in the West it mainly was somebody sitting around a cracker barrel uttering witticisms. I think last time anybody really came up with any really civilized philosophy or any kind or another, they gave him a nice slug of hemlock. It's not been a very popular subject, but it was only unpopular to this degree that it disturbed the merchants of chaos. And these fellows that had trouble with this were only luckless to this degree that they didn't reach the truth. They had limited truth. And the road to truth is something that you must follow all the way down. There is not such a thing as a limited truth. You've got to go all the way when you start talking about the truth of life. You mustn't hold up and not find out what it is. But people set you the consistent and continual example, and they say, look, philosophy is very dangerous stuff. Well, yes, it is very dangerous stuff to a fellow supporting himself by lies. Who's it dangerous to? It's only dangerous to people who are dangerous. It's only dangerous to people who are dangerous to others.
Well, this gives us a very interesting view when we start looking over the situation. Not that the story of Scientology isn't a rather remarkable one. It's actually unparalleled, but it's very simple. It's extremely simple. And the goals and targets of philosophy are inevitable, whether I said they were this or said they weren't. By the mere fact of people looking at this truth, finding these things were true, applying these things and achieving a higher state of existence, you would inevitably get, whether anybody said you would or not, a calmer life, a calmer environment, calmer civilization. And there'd be less disturbance, and there'd be less pay for disturbance to be built out of that civilization. People would go uptown just on that basis alone. Therefore, the first target when one starts to introduce Scientology to anybody would, of course, be that person's own environment. His own environment. Not his mind, but his environment. And here is a whole worked-out philosophy now on the subject of the environment, under the heading of the dangerous environment. Now, if you scatter your own wits around in this thing, you could at once extrapolate, knowing as you know upper levels, you could at once extrapolate the ramifications of, well, diagnosis and treatment. You could dream up processes on just this basis. This individual believes that the environment is more dangerous than he is, than it is. He certainly believes, this individual certainly believes that the environment is too dangerous for him. That we're completely convinced of. It's too dangerous for him. There are zones and areas in that environment which he believes are completely overwhelming and that he will not be able to personally cope with. This we can say with absolute certainty. Whether or not we're talking to Joe, Bill, or Pete, or even a politician, or a newspaper reporter, or a cop, this individual would be able to agree with you on that basis, unless, of course, he were completely insane. He'd be walking around in a toga saying, I am emperor of Earth, you see, and all Earth is subject to my orders, you see, and he'd be in a booby hatch someplace. He'd be crazy. He has, of course, got the final solution. You just make up your mind you're dangerous enough and you won't worry anymore. But falling short of that, any relatively sane person that you can talk to will agree with you that the environment and certain spheres of the environment are a bit too much for them. I'm not, by the way, reviling the Merchant of Chaos. He's completely crazy in that he thinks the environment has to be made chaotic. I don't know why he thinks it needs his assistance. But this fellow has his points, and he thinks the environment's too much for him, and he certainly knows he's making the environment too much for others. He certainly knows this. So in talking to an individual, we know that the environment is being made more dangerous for him or her than it is. Lord knows it's dangerous enough, and Lord knows there are real areas of danger in this environment. But also, we know that there are areas of that environment being made more dangerous than they are. We know that point, and that is one of the key points of Scientology Zero. One point is that the environment seems dangerous to the individual. You'll get an agreement on this. And that he is undertaking certain methods to hold the environment down and keep it from biting him. We certainly know that. And we also know, due to the presence of people who have a vested interest in this, that the environment is being made more dangerous in certain areas than it actually is. We know those things exist. So therefore, we can then say that the individual could be marched forward into some sectors or quarters of this environment with his own inspection in some way and perceive that the environment was being made more dangerous than it was. Now, we could also see that, and another operating principle of Scientology Zero, is that the individual's health level, sanity level, activity level, and ambition level are monitored by his concept of the dangerousness of the environment. These various levels are monitored by his concept of the dangerousness of the environment. Now, what do we got here? We have factors out of which we could work. Well, we have factors out of which we could draw up an improvement program for any human being. Rather quickly, we could draw up an improvement program for any given human being. One, he considers his health and well-being and that sort of thing to an enormously greater degree. This is the discovery. The rest of this is just built up on this one discovery. The discovery is that his health and well-being, his sanity, his ambition, are monitored by how dangerous and overwhelming he believes his environment is. He's actually not operating to the challenge of the environment. He is withdrawing from the threat of the environment to this degree. Now, knowing that, we could therefore improve these things in the individual without regard to his mind. Now, you see, now we're dealing with a very interesting sphere here, aren't we? We've mentioned this before under destimulation. This previously has occupied just one little level in the auditor handling the PC. He finds out the PC's living is too restimulating for him, tells him he won't process him again until he moves, tells him he mustn't go home during the whole period of this next intensive, but must stay downtown in a hotel where he's less restimulated. We've seen this around, don't you see? But now let's make a whole banquet out of this tidbit. And we're not explaining to this fellow anything about his mind. We're explaining to him about his environment. We know we're going to get, it's a minor amount, but it nevertheless be a demonstrable amount. We're going to get a resurgence and a betterment in the area of his health. We're going to get a betterment in his physical and mental alertness. And we're going to get a betterment here on his ambition, his amount of activity, and that sort of thing. And if we're working in this particular field with Scientology Zero, then we're actually not going to work with his mind. Do you see that? We're not going to work with his mind. We're going to take this as another entirely different sphere and activity. Well, naturally, thee and me know that the reason he flinches every time he enters a red room and so forth has to do with a whole bunch of facsimiles he's developed on the subject of red rooms, which are being firmly held in place by a bunch of our eyes that have to do with this and that and the other thing. We know this mental combination, and in the absence of that, in that mental combination isn't eventually subtracted or knocked out and so on. We know that his gain is limited. But now let's talk within the real reality of the individual we're talking to. Now, what is his expectancy? What is his expectancy at this level? It may be this low, that he just won't be so frightened when the doorbell rings. We're talking now about a very tiny improvement, but nevertheless, this improvement will be quite real to him, be enormously real. And in the story of Scientology, what we're butting up against here now is this one particular level, three. People find it works. If people don't find it works, that is the end of Scientology's progress in that particular direction. Well, this is an area of high-level workability. You see, all a fellow has to do is study his environment a little bit. He doesn't even have to study his mind. Well, this is a very, very good thing. This is a very easy one. So we're just going to get it that when he wakes up in the morning, he doesn't have an agonizing feeling like something horrible is going to happen if he gets up. You see, this is going to not disappear, perhaps, but diminish. That he will be a little more active in life. Now, the funny part of it is, I just tell you, you can settle for those gains, but the gains you will actually get will, in most cases, if you're settling for those, greatly exceed your expectations and greatly exceed his expectations. Also, these gains are adequate here to startle a guy's ears into a thrumming quiver. All right. How do we go about this? How would we use this material using these various principles? Well, remember now that most the threat he is worried about is probably imaginary. It's really not anything he worried about. Let's embark upon a simple therapy. This is a therapy at Scientology Zero. Don't read the newspapers for 2 weeks and see if you don't feel better. Of course, he doesn't read the newspaper for 2 weeks. Of course, you feel better. He'll say, fine, now read it for a week, and you'll feel at the end of that week where you'll find you feel worse. And after that time, make up your mind whether or not you ought to pay any attention to the newspapers. You could just lay this out as a simple experiment. You see? Well, he can easily do that because it's a negative action. It's not expensive. As a matter of fact, it's slightly, microscopically cheaper not to buy newspapers, you see, than to buy them. So it isn't a costly experiment at all. This direction destimulation, don't you see? Now, that's all very well from his personal viewpoint. You could actually tell him, and here, by the way, you have the little junior cousin or the little gene that grows into all of the havingness processes later when properly placed in his position. See? Just tell him to look around the environment and find something that isn't a threat to him. If he ever gets too upset or confused, why, just start looking around his environment and find something that isn't being a threat to him. That's a magic process, by the way, and that is very smoothly worded. That is far, far more sophisticated in upper-level Scientology than it looks. You could actually find what sort of a threat he was experiencing at level two and run that as a havingness process on a negative. See, he's very worried that things are going to fall on him. So you could dream it up on the basis of, look around here and find something that isn't going to fall on you. See, and he would eventually, gradually, a great calm lag, find one thing someplace. You must make him find the one thing, you see, that isn't going to fall on him. He feels much better. And he even has a lesser gain than that. He realizes if he just ran it to cognition, that he has thought that everything was going to fall on him. That's the cognition. He's already told you this, see? But he now knows it by inspecting the environment. This, under the heading of this in processing, is old take a walk. You feel bad, go take a walk. And look at things as you walk. Well, of course, this is a forward progress into the environment. And the reason that works, I can tell you now, is the person finds out that the environment is not threatening. This is a whole positive education on the negative threat. You understand what I mean? Positive education, because he goes around and looks and see if something is doing this to him. And, of course, he finds out it's a negative threat. This fellow is all in a sweat on the subject of the Chinese situation. Well, of course, you could ARC break somebody and chop him up with this thing, too, by just negating and not ising the whole situation. You could say to him, well, what threat have the Chinese ever been to you anyhow that you're so worried about? Now he has to protest and justify his own thinking. He has to get himself all tangled up trying to prove he's right and you're wrong. So, of course, that has no workability at all. But this is true, but this you could do. Now, in an upper-level process, you would run a repetitive process, something like, what event have you heard about that hasn't affected you much? You could run that as a repetitive process, and you get big gain. But your effort at Scientology Zero is somehow or other to get the individual to inspect the environment and find out that there is some slight greater security in it. That's all. That doesn't sound like much, but then I'm just dumping it on your head, a complete wagon load of work on the subject of Scientology Zero. I can give you the principles, which I have just given you. Those principles are very short and sweet. And out of those principles, you have to work with any individual as he walks up, because he's got a different environment than every other individual that walks up. So you can't tell you too many processes to run with this individual. You see what I mean? I mean, he's going to come up and he's going to tell you he's worried about different things. I can only give you the principles by which you could get him to not worry about them quite so much. But it has nothing to do with talking to him. It isn't up to Itza at all. It all runs on the single auditing command, look. Don't worry. Look and find out if the environment is as threatening as it appears to be. This is your single auditing approach to the thing. Individual's very worried. He's sitting at his desk and so on. Papers are piling in. Everything seems to be going up in a high uproar. And he just feels completely overwhelmed. Well, he himself ought to be able to look at the papers on his desk. They're the source of the threat, aren't they? And find something about them that isn't a threat. The threat, of course, will balance out in the discovery. That would be an action. That's a sort of take a walk while sitting at the desk thing. Person feels like everybody is hostile in the environment to them. Just say, well, now you find something people say or do around here that isn't hostile to you. All on the gradient, you see. Find, is there one person in the organization who isn't actively hostile to you? Is there anything said today that wasn't directly and immediately hostile to you? This can also be played in the direction of exaggeration. But you get into mental things and so forth. You get into mental responses when you go in this direction and move up in levels. So you know what I mean by that. You can get the exaggeration of it, get the idea of a Chinese in every corner shooting at you with tong hatchets, you know. You can do all kinds of wild things in an auditor, extrapolating and auditing somebody and so forth, undoubtedly go hog wild with it. Perfectly all right. Well, go do so. I was running the process the other day just on this basis, just readying up this material for Scientology Zero, and it was on the basis, look around here and find something that isn't trying to exteriorize you. PC didn't find anything. But had the cognition that she thought things were, and was very happy about that. Did find two answers, both the same answer. Me, I'm not trying to exteriorize me. You see this? Almost any inspection that you give it is a valuable inspection. Almost any inspection. For instance, one of you, right now, sitting still or minding your own business or all by yourself, could just think over carefully. It's a very bad thing to get into what things in the environment do threaten me. I don't advise you to go off in that particular line, you see. But sit down and figure out if there's anything that isn't a threat to you. A fellow who has a PTP or something like that usually can't get his mind disentangled from it very far. But is there anything around that isn't pushing this PTP at me? That's an interesting question. Sometimes takes you a few minutes to get the thing answered. The guy who has just lost his girl. He just lost his girl. And he feels the horrible sadness and loss and so forth. I mean, parched everything. Actually, everything in the environment will talk to him about this girl. You possibly have had similar experience. Yeah. Somebody just, you think of somebody's name and so on, you can remember a time when there was a moment or a few moments or a period of time in which it was impossible for you to look around and not be reminded of this person. Just, that was a personless environment. When one's concentration has been very, very heavy on an individual or a person, it is sometimes almost heroically difficult to not associate everything with that person. Well, a trick is to find something, of course, that isn't reminding you of that person. You might have search long way. This is how to recover from a love affair. This is a little bonus. Could have used it myself a few times in the last few trillennia. But the situation is, in actual fact, a simple one. The individual has identified everything in the environment with his unrest. Everything in the environment has become identified with the threatening things in the environment. And the individual can't pull his attention off of these things. But by indicating things in the environment, even quite simply, and by directing anybody's attention to things which are not so connected, making the individual find things which are not actively reminding one, you get a differentiation going where an identification existed before. And where a differentiation exists, intelligence and judgment can return. Intelligence and judgment cannot exist in the face of an identification, but can exist in the face of a differentiation. So this opens the door pretty wide. Now, the funny part of this is that an individual, oddly enough, usually finds data more workable that he can work on others than data which is being worked on him, unless he also has the opportunity to work upon others. You'll find this as a truth when teaching PE courses or even small groups of people or even an individual, that if you give him something he can use to help others. It's an interesting commentary on the actual character of man. Man is basically good. If you can give him things which will help him help others, he'll be far more interested than if you're simply giving him things which help him. And therefore, in PEs and that sort of thing, and in teaching the individual, or in any booklets laying out this material and so forth, your supplementary advice in the matter should always go on the basis of who are you trying to help? Who are you trying to help find that their environment is not as dangerous as they think it is? This is so true that many of the questions you get in a PE or from an individual are the hypothetical question, which is in reverse to the doctor's question. The doctor's patients are always asking them for a friend. A friend has this trouble, and what would be your advice that I could give my friend? When it's the person himself that has this trouble, you see, the medico is always running into this that way. Well, Scientologist runs into it, not being in the same profession and a more honest one, which is quite different. And in actual fact, the individual will ask for himself because he wants it to help somebody else. One of the things that plagues an instructor is that his questions he is being asked are very frequently simply being asked by a student so that this student then will make sure that some other student knows. Now, the question is being asked for the benefit of another student or other students. Quite interesting. Now, that's true of all such wisdoms. So this Scientology Zero has to be pretty darn well understood by you in order to pass it along to Joe so he can help Pete. Because he will actually Go help Pete with it. Find out that it works to some degree and use it to help himself. And quite often that is the cycle it goes into. Not he uses it to help himself, don't you see, and then goes helps Pete. It's got a flip-flop type of cycle. That is to say, he helps Pete with it and then finds out that it helps Pete a little bit, so he takes some of the advice himself. It's quite remarkable. But that factor enters in particularly at this level of Scientology Zero. Now, take a walk and look at things. It's just the mildest advice that you could possibly give anybody. That is almost certain to produce a result if the person will do it. It's quite an interesting process. There's nothing very dangerous about it. Of course, an old-timer like myself, I mean, I gave myself this advice one time up at 250 Old Brompton Road. Several sections of the sky had fallen in that day, and there were considerable amounts of tumult and turmoil going on and so on. I decided it was just all too much, so I decided I would take my own advice and go out and take a walk. So I proceeded to do so, and because I told people to look at things. So when I went around Old Brompton Road district up there in London, I was busy looking at things, and of course I looked at them real good. And this intrigued me very much. And I found out by the process of looking at things and then putting tension on the beam with which I was looking at them, what I could pull myself forward. And I didn't have to walk. And this became very intriguing to me. And skidding my heels along the pavement and so on, I became quite cheerful about the whole thing till I noticed a cop on the corner regarding me with some... Shook me confidence, it did a little bit. Almost pulled myself out of the body that way. Anyway... Did me a lot of good, cheered me up enormously. But there's a level of action, don't you see? There's a level of activity, a level of something or other. Now, that was about 1956 or something like that. The only earlier one I had that could produce the same result was go out and clip hedges. And you know you can only trim a hedge so often. You run out of hedges. It's quite effective. It's quite effective. Now, the master question is, what part of the environment isn't threatening? You're basing this on the identification, the individual's identification of everything. That is your master question. Isn't. It's negative. Because he has everything identified with that part of the environment which is threatening. Well, you're getting to differentiate and find out there are some parts of the environment that aren't threatening, and he'll make some considerable forward progress. Then the individual can also arrange his life somewhat. And it's a funny thing that by making an individual plan a life by which he could live calmly and unthreatened, that the life he is living becomes less threatening. Well, this even applies to some guy who was on the, poor fellow's on the complete treadmill. He has to keep this job. It doesn't pay very much money. He's got to stay there. There's no chance of his getting off of it and so forth. And he finds that environment very hostile. Well, he's a sort of in a trap, isn't he? He's in a sort of a box, all of his own making. You get him to plan. We don't care how wildly he plans it or how he dreams it, but just getting to plan a life which would not be so threatening. And he will go on working at the job he is working at much more happily and much calmer. Now, when you move this up, then, in Scientology 1, and you start introducing communication factors and show them how to communicate to people and so on, they find they can produce an effect upon people and people cease to be as threatening. And these things all tend to multiply on up the line. And if you keep having this alive, as you go on up the levels of Scientology, I mean, you keep having this in mind and don't drop it out of view completely and forever. You really never cease to lose totally the benefit that has started there at Scientology Zero. The environment isn't as threatening. People are looking for a less threatening environment, or knowing mostly that they can't escape to that, looking for a way to be more enduring in the environment they're in. That's what people are looking for. It's a two-way look. They'd love to be able to get out, or they'd love to be able to master. They don't think they can, to a large degree. They know they can't get out very far, and it wouldn't do any good, and nobody has ever been able to give them anything by which they could exert much more influence on their environment than before. And those are the basic goals and targets of the individual. There are no more complicated goals and targets than that that are completely general to every individual there is. Any Thetan has these things. In other words, not to have to stand up to the type of threatened environment that he's in, or be more enduring or dominant of the environment he finds himself in so that it is less threatening. These are your basic PTPs of a Thetan that have been with that Thetan ever since he's been coming on up the universe. And of course, being a fairly nice bloke, he has actually been looking for something he could help other people be less intimidated or less fix their environment so they could get out of it, or so that they could endure or dominate their environment better. He's also been looking for something to help his friends. He's never really completely forgotten those. Even the drunk on Skid Row never forgets that. Even the bum in jail never forgets that. These fellows then are actually trying to help others. And what you need is a level of help which requires practically no education at all. Or the education which it is receiving, of course, is a destimulation of the environment anyway. Just a discussion of the situation. Now, that's what's required. There's no auditing skill required there. There's nothing required there, and yet there's a potential betterment. This become real to the individual, no matter how crudely it is put to him. Just the concept, all by itself, that he considers the environment dangerous and overwhelming, and that he doesn't quite know where that danger or overwhelm is coming from. That concept alone is an enormous piece of wisdom. That is just a square mile of wisdom dumped right on his head. It's never occurred to him before. It's true. He'd never thought of it. He never thought of it for himself or anything else. He just felt it and was it all the time. And what you've actually defined is what he was. This is his isness. Quailing back from a very threatening environment that may overwhelm him at any moment. Unable to progress forward into greater endurance or power that can handle that threatening environment. This is his life. You have told him the story of his life in just those few words, don't you see? Well, if you take it out from there and you actually provide a therapy, well, you say, knock off some of the things in your life that make you upset. Well, that's good, solid advice. Who upsets you? Well, don't talk to them for a while. this is crude. See? What activities leave you feeling worse and so forth? Well, just don't do them for a while. What things in the environment aren't really a threat to you? All right, you got some of those? All right, fine. Associate with those. Pay more attention to them. You know, you're liable to shoot that person's IQ up 15, 20 points. You're liable to snap him around and get him out of the wheelchair and so forth, just with no more wisdom than this little package that you had in this last hour and a half. So what we needed was something that was very, very pervasive, something very simple, and something that would go forward that had no auditor connected with it at all. It only had a teacher connected with it. And given that, and the developments which you can develop out of that, and which I will undoubtedly write and develop out of that, why, we have pushed a whole new philosophy under the tremendous structure of Scientology. It took a lot of doing. It looks very simple now that it's done, isn't it?
But I had to think of, how do I think up a whole field of philosophy that has whole bodies of truth in it that are an introduction to the man in the street, the person who knows nothing, you haven't any time to teach him anything, that he will immediately see the truth of, that requires no auditing, that requires nothing about the mind in connection with it at all. It was quite a specification, but there it is. I hope it's some help to you. Thank you very much.